B-Pod Studios.
Keith Pompey. Keith, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
Doing okay.
Great.
Doing okay. How long have you been in the bubble?
Well, it's weird. I've been in Orlando since, for 3 days. And what I'm doing is, I go in the bubble on game days.
Oh.
So basically, yeah, I'm staying right outside. And they have, two stages where certain reporters, if you don't want to go in the bubble, you just go in there, you take a test, and you basically go in there on game days. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay. Now, as far as contact with players, is everything through teleconferencing, basically?
Kind of, yeah. Everything through teleconferencing.
All right. Now, how are you handling the your own version of isolation?
It's fine. I mean, it's cool. Like, I have a nice little spot down here, and where what I decided to do is, instead of going out to eat, I have a kitchen and all that, so I went grocery shopping, and I've been, basically I'm living at home.
Oh, that's awesome. What's Keith Pompey making in the kitchen?
Well, yesterday I made the worst steak in the world. I blame it on the stove, and I blame it on the Publix where I went to, because it was awful. It tastes like cardboard, but you know how it is when if your food is bad, you eat it. When other people's food is bad, you try not to eat it. So
I can vouch for not having your home kitchen advantage. I can definitely vouch for that. Keith, we've been batting around the Sixers all day. We're really excited about the season getting underway on Saturday. We can't wait for it. We've been impressed with probably the person we've been most impressed with has been Matisse Thybulle. I mean, Ben Simmons did what he did in the first two games. Joel Embiid only played the one game. Tobias Harris has looked good. But Matisse Thybulle has really caught our attention. To me, I don't know if Brett Brown's going to use the 8 games as more of an evaluation period, but I think Matisse is at least flirting with the idea of making himself a starter, at least earning some minutes. What are you making of Matisse so far?
I mean, I like Matisse a lot. I really do. I think that if Brett Brown has one thing that will probably prohibit Matisse from starting, it may be some of his shot selection. You know what I mean? But when you look at it, I think that if the Shake Milton experiment at the one and Ben at the four doesn't really work out, I can actually see them sliding Matisse in there. Just because, Matisse brings on the extra defender. The thing about Matisse is, it's one of those things, 2 days ago, he had a horrible offensive game. But on the defensive side of the ball, he was spectacular. And it made you forget about what he couldn't do offensively. I mean, he had one steal. He took it to the other end and had a dunk. He blocked a shot. He stripped another guy. I mean, Matisse is averaging 2.66 steals a game. So he's electrifying. And I think he deserves a lot of minutes, but I think just thinking of how Brett Brown thinks, it's some of the shot selection that he has could be the only thing prohibit him from going in the starting lineup, if they want to get rid of Shake and the Ben experiment.
Keith, how do you see Brett Brown handling these 8 games leading into the playoffs? Because I was listening to somebody nationally the other day. And I think they're in the bubble, and they said, a lot of these teams are going to just use it as a feel out period, get their legs under them. They're not really looking to change their seating or whatever it may be. Do you see the Sixers doing that, Brett Brown doing that, looking and seeing what he has more so than actually ramping up to play hard games and win?
I agree with that. I mean, he actually said that about a couple weeks ago. He said that he's going to, use these seating games as trying to, see who's going to be in this rotation. Right now, I think he'll play probably 10 guys, but he doesn't want to do that. He wants to do the process of elimination, based on play for most. Now, I think, what we'll see is we'll probably see, Matisse, Furkan, Al Horford as primary guys. And then, it's going to come down to Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III, just see who, if these guys can battle for that ninth spot, right now. But the way it looks, I mean, I hate to say it, if Furkan continues to struggle, he could lose his role to someone because, Brett more than most. And he's yes, he wants people to make shots, but you have that in Shake Milton and Tobias. but is he also wants people to make stops. And it just seems like Furkan has been struggling mightily at that end, you know, in these three scrimmage games.
Keith, more specifically, how are they going to handle Embiid coming up? Like Brett said, he'll be back. He's playing Saturday. We all, you know, outsider looking in, you say, all right, first game, I guess he's going to play a regular rotation. You and I, being around the team as much as we were, to me, it reeks of easing him in 2 minutes. Do you see that happening with him? Like, all right, he'll get 18 this game. Then we're going to ramp it to 20 a few games later. Do you think they're going to do it that way?
I think they will. I mean, especially, you know, you're talking about this calf. You know, they're saying calf tightness, you know, is one of those things where, you know, you have to be careful with it. I mean, the bad thing is that he wasn't able to basically gel in game with his teammates. The good thing is he'll have 4 days off to rest, actually more than 4 days off to rest it. But I think, yeah, like when you're talking about trying to figure out a rotation, it's one of those things where you're probably going to ease them in a little bit. Now, the one thing is, I do believe that he does need to play with these guys. They have to figure stuff out, especially with Ben Simmons. I mean, because I think the spacing with both of these guys occupying the post, you know, they have to get in a rhythm. They have to, you know, because they're the two most important players on the team. So you want to have them out there, but at the same time, you have to be careful because if you don't have them at his full strength in the postseason, I mean, that could be an early exit for the Sixers.
Speaking with Keith Pompey, Inquirer.com. More on that. When I watched that first, you know, granted it was like 6.5 minutes of Shake being the point guard with Joel and Ben Simmons on the floor at the same time. I wasn't overly impressed, but I wasn't disappointed. It was the first time they did it. How much work do you think they have to do, and how long do you think it'll take before those guys can all get on the same page?
It's going to take a minute. I mean, here's the thing. So, to me, you know, when they said Ben Simmons, I mean, we talked before, y'all. Like, when they said Ben Simmons is going to be the power forward, I'm like, okay, well, he's just going to basically do the same thing that he's been doing before. You know what I mean? He's going to have the ball. He's going to do whatever. Now, my problem is sometimes when Shake brings the ball up, everyone in the gym knows that his initial pass is most of the time going to go to Ben. So teams were like, I saw where in the first game and teams were jumping at, you know, Ben was attracting the crowd, right? So it made it a little bit tougher. Then I also saw in that first game where Joel was like running from 3-point line to 3-point line. And a lot of people says, okay, he's being lazy. He's out of condition. But Joel, I noticed when he does that a lot of time is to create space, his own space. He's a better three-point shooter than Ben. So what he does is he tries to get spacing. They have to correct that. You know what I mean? There were two things that they have to correct. They got to get the spacing down, and they got to stop making it so easy for teams to defend it. Because, and if you notice, when they went up against Oklahoma City was extremely physical with Shake. And I think teams are going to do that, because they're going to try to get the ball out of his hands before he can get it in Ben Simmons' hands.
Keith, the other thing is, when you watched Ben Simmons play in that first game, that style of play that Ben Simmons had, that's the guy shooting from the outside, the two threes that he shot, the one that he made, as aggressive as he always is. That guy, I think, is an MVP candidate. That's been my point on developing his game to use that outside shot. The guy that played through game two and then the little bit of game three, really, that's a guy that I think is more the perennial all-star. Do you think it is that jump shot that is taking away the next step of his career? And do you think we will see it when everything does start up and start to count?
I think you're going to have to see it when everything goes up and starts to count. Because, see, at this particular time, like, you know, you talk to people around the league and they're all saying, yo, we want Ben shooting the ball. Continue, stay out there, shoot. We're going to leave you wide open and you're going to shoot. Until he consistently starts making it. You know what I mean? Like, the thing is, you know, he took it twice the first game, and he hasn't done it afterwards, right? They didn't even really go to him afterwards. And so, basically, they were playing 4-on-5 on those possessions. So, teams are going to leave him open. He's going to have to drain it just to keep him honest. But again, it's not going to be something overnight because they're going to live with it. Tatum's like, oh, okay, shoot it. Okay, you made it. Like, he's going to have to make a whole bunch of them for it to get different, be different. But to me, the second game, there was a play where Ben got the ball. He comes down. He does a he dribbles the ball behind his back. He goes in the lane, and he kicks it out to Shake. And Shake buries the three. To me, that's when the 76ers are at their best, because Shake stretches the floor. You know, Ben, when he gets out there and he dribbles, he's a locomotive, so to speak. And I think that's when the Sixers are at their best, and that's when Ben's at his best and Shake. So, you know what I mean? It's like a tough one right now with the Sixers.
Well, last thing I want to ask you, at least about Ben and the shooting thing. We got into this debate a little bit, I think it was yesterday, about how the bench and his teammates react when Ben does shoot. Do you think that's something they need to stop, or do you think that's something Ben doesn't really care about? They wouldn't do it unless, you know, he was fine with it.
I think they need to stop it in a way, because, you know, if you remember, what was it, in the beginning of, was it this year has been so long. So the beginning of this year, this preseason, when he hit the three against the team from China.
Guangzhou Long Lions.
Yeah, and everyone was excited and how Ben was embarrassed by it and this and that. And what it does is it just brings so much attention to him, and he doesn't like it. You know what I mean? So I think that just stop, like, you know, here's Cooney's been around. Cooney's seen it. I mean, pregame, you'll go out there, and Ben Simmons is draining threes. The problem is he just doesn't do it in the game.
Right.
So, you know, you just got to make it as normal as possible and stop bringing, you know, this attention to it, because then all of a sudden he shies away from it.
All right. Now, you know what I mean? Yeah, no, I hear you, and I get that that's the impression. Now, is that a report from Keith Pompey of Inquirer.com that Ben Simmons doesn't like it, or is that the impression Keith Pompey gets?
I mean, I've never asked him that, but you can just look at it and tell. I mean, you know, so, I mean, you can look at it and tell, like, Ben's the type of guy, like, you know, when, all right, put it this way, like, last year, preseason, he was asked about shooting three-pointers, right? He got a little testy a little bit.
Oh, he did.
Because people kept asking questions.
Yeah.
But so, you know what I mean, this ain't like clickbait, or this ain't like breaking headlines. You know what I mean? I don't want to say, like, soundbite, Keith Pompey did this and did that, but, I mean, you know. Anybody can see it, and sure. You can tell, like, it's the attention. Like, right. He just doesn't like all that extra attention on that shot. Now, one can argue that, you know, you and your camp bring it out because you guys are providing these videos and getting people psyched up about it. But then all of a sudden comes the questions like, well, how come you're not doing it more? You know what I mean? So, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, I just think that just go about it as if, like, you would do it for Furkan, for Matisse, for Glenn Robinson III, and just play.
Keith, do you think we'll see a difference in Brett Brown coaching in-game in that we could term it as he's coaching for his job?
I mean, we could, man. I think there was a point last year in the playoffs where, you know, you have to say Brett did a pretty good job. Nick Nurse did a better job towards the end. But, you know, Brett tried. I think that we'll see a lot, like, when the playoffs come. But, yeah, you would have to say that Brett Brown is going to try to do whatever he can to coach for his job this year. I mean, he's going to play. I mean, I think certain guys are going to get a quick hook. You know, he's not going to have time for guys missing assignments and stuff like this. We're talking about these role players. And they're going to do different schemes. I mean, you know, Brett has – the one thing is, you know, Brett has admitted, he says for during the quarantine, it was one of those things where him and his coaches got together and they've been breaking stuff down all year. You know, you're not going to really see it. You didn't see it in the scrimmages. You probably won't see it in the seeding games, you know, but you're going to start seeing some differences and seeing some, like, some coaching tactics, you know, in the playoff game.
Keith, last thing for me. Are you going to do any bass fishing while you're in Orlando? That seems to be the big thing.
Nah, bro. I'm going to go to the supermarket, and I'm going to buy some bass or whatever, And I'm gonna cook the nastiest bash ever and tell y'all that it's the greatest bash.
Oh, there you go. It'll be better than your steak, my friend. Keith, safe travels to you, man. Be safe down there in Florida and all that stuff, man. Seriously. Thanks for coming on with us. I know we'll check back with you probably later on in the NBA bubbleness.
All right, brother. All right.
Thanks, Keith. Appreciate it.
Keith Pompey.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.